This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. This fall, the United States Supreme Court will hear a case that could determine whether the tent poles of the Affordable Care Act will stand. States are suing to overturn Obamacare. And if they are successful, they would be allowed to walk away from some of the policy's core functions, including mandatory coverage for pre-existing conditions. No doubt you've heard a bit about this in the run-up to Judge Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation hearings for her nomination to the Supreme Court. We were curious about what else a Supreme Court ruling might change. This week, the University of Michigan is hosting a virtual conversation to pull some of these threads. Among the participants, a voice you know well, Dr. Howard Markel, director of the Center for the History of Medicine at the University of Michigan and a frequent commentator on Stateside. Howard, good to hear from you.
Great to be here, April.
And we're also joined today by Dr. John Ayanian, director of the Institute of Healthcare Policy and Innovation at the University of Michigan. He's taking part as well. John Ayanian, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you.
John, will you remind us about the nature of the case before the high court this fall and just who brought the challenge?
So a number of state attorneys general in Republican-led states around the country have gone through the federal court system to once again challenge the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. In 2017, when President Trump and the Republican-led Congress eliminated the tax penalty for the individual mandate, that raised a question of whether the Affordable Care Act remained constitutional, because in the original challenge to the case in 2012, Chief Justice John Roberts had determined that it was that tax penalty that gave Congress the power to have an individual mandate, and that the Affordable Care Act as a whole rested on that decision. So now we have a number, over a dozen Republican state attorneys general who are challenging the law. And on the other side, we have a number of Democratic state attorneys general who are seeking to defend it before the Supreme Court.
If the Affordable Care Act is overturned by the Supreme Court, what course of action might Congress pursue, assuming that there is the will to pick up the ball with this again?
It very much depends on the results of the presidential and congressional election that we'll all be participating in come November 3rd. If President Trump is reelected with a Republican-led Congress, then it's very likely they would turn to the states and encourage them to come up with more state-led solutions for what should come next after the Affordable Care Act. Whereas if the Affordable Care Act is overturned and Vice President Joe Biden is elected with a Democratic-led Congress, there would be an opportunity actually for an even stronger federal response to healthcare reform in the United States, either building on the Affordable Care Act and fixing some of the problems that are being challenged right now, such as the lack of the tax penalty, or coming up with a stronger response, which some in the Democratic Party are advocating for Medicare for all. So it very much depends on the results of this upcoming election, what will come next if the Supreme Court were to overturn the Affordable Care Act.
John Ayanian, when you think about the shifts in healthcare policy over the decades, how big a watershed was the Affordable Care Act?
In many ways, it's the most important reform to our healthcare system since the creation of Medicare and Medicaid in 1965. At the time the Affordable Care Act was enacted in 2010, we had nearly 50 million Americans who were uninsured, and that had been a longstanding problem for over a decade. And with the Affordable Care Act, we've seen over 20 million Americans gain insurance coverage, mainly through the expansion of Medicaid, such as the Healthy Michigan Plan here in Michigan, as well as the creation of the Affordable Care Act marketplaces, which provide subsidized private insurance to middle-income Americans and their families who don't have access to health insurance through their employers.
Howard Markel, a decade now after it's become law, is there anything you would add about how the ACA has changed healthcare in America?
Well, as John has so cogently said, we had this longstanding, not only problem, but huge expense of 50 million Americans not being insured. And that's been cut roughly in half or a little bit less than that. And I think we have a long way to go with those who remain uninsured. But this has been a battle that has been argued and rejected or approved since Teddy Roosevelt was running for president as a third party ticket, the Bull Moose ticket in 1912. Woodrow Wilson won that election, by the way. It came up in 1917. It came up in the 30s with the Social Security Act, but FDR had to remove the health care issues to pass Social Security. Harry Truman proposed it. And of course, Lyndon Johnson came up with a compromise for Medicare for the elderly, Medicaid for the poor, and the hope that the employer insurance would cover up the middle. We've since found that that is simply not enough. What my hope is that we will continue to build on this issue with the very clear notion that every American has a right to health and health care.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. Howard Markel of the Center for the History of Medicine at the University of Michigan and Dr. John Ayanian, Director of the Institute for Healthcare Policy and Innovation at the U of M. All this as a virtual conversation is in the works this week to talk about the ACA, its history, and its future. Gentlemen, the ACA and the repeal of Obamacare, as it was put at the time, was not a small part of the Tea Party movement. And the strength of the movement and the midterm victories that the Republican Party was able to achieve in the midst of the Obama administration. As time went on, it became clear that many voters didn't want to go back to the way things were, and that the ACA had opened up some possibilities that many Americans would be afraid to lose. There was the shift of Democrats winning elections on the strength of keeping healthcare reforms in place. At this point, do you see any political points to be won in getting rid of some or all of the ACA? John, what's your read on that?
Well, there was one part of the Affordable Care Act that was unpopular. That was the individual mandate. And the tax bill passed by Congress at the end of 2017 eliminated the financial penalty that went with that, really sort of taking away the harshest component of that individual mandate, which many people on both sides of the aisle had problems with. But there are other provisions of the Affordable Care Act that have turned out to be extremely popular, such as Medicaid expansion, such as subsidies for private insurance through the marketplaces, the ability for young adults to stay on their family health insurance plans, and even some parts that aren't as well known, such as improving the Medicare Part D drug benefit for Medicare beneficiaries. All of those have been very popular, and I think that's why when there was a chance that the Affordable Care Act could be fully eliminated by Congress in 2017, and then voters had a chance to weigh in during the 2018 midterm elections, you saw a very strong support for retaining most provisions of the Affordable Care Act. And now we have another election in just a few weeks, and it will be important to see how voters take a stand at this point when so much is on the line with the future of the ACA.
You don't get very far in healthcare policy if you don't have at least some cooperation from healthcare providers and insurance providers. John Ayanian, what positions has the industry staked out that you think they will absolutely stand by? Where is their line in the sand on future changes to ACA?
Well, as Howard indicated, most major physicians, professional organizations have now taken a strong stand in favor of the Affordable Care Act, in favor of expanding insurance coverage to all Americans. Even some traditionally organizations that often opposed healthcare reform and expanded coverage in the past have now taken a stronger stand. And the insurance industry agreed to a series of compromises with the Affordable Care Act. So they accepted some of the protections for pre-existing conditions in return for subsidies and encouraging everyone to sign up for coverage when they were eligible. So my sense right now is that most healthcare providers and major insurers are supportive of the Affordable Care Act and don't want to go back to the system we had before the ACA was enacted in 2010.
Do you see stakeholders reacting in part to the pandemic, or are these positions that they either had taken before or would have taken in any regard?
I would say most of these positions were established before COVID-19 and the pandemic hit our society. But the pandemic has unmasked how important health insurance coverage is to Americans of all ages and all backgrounds. because it's so unpredictable when someone might become ill or injured, and having good health insurance coverage gives them access to the effective medical care they need for COVID-19, as well as a range of other conditions.
Howard Markel, I feel like I have seen a bit more messaging around the ACA, perhaps in anticipation of Judge Barrett's confirmation hearings, or perhaps as a way to talk to voters who were on the fence about what they should be paying attention to with the top of the ticket races. But are you surprised the ACA hasn't been more at the forefront of the national dialogue in a presidential election year?
Well, you know, if you listen to Joe Biden's speeches, and it's certainly if you look at his commercials, health is at the forefront of his platform. The mere fact that he wears a mask, something that President Trump mocked him for before contracting COVID himself, I think is a sign of this. And as John was saying, there was a movement, or really an enjoyment, if you will, of these benefits by most Americans. It's very similar, by the way, to Social Security in 1935-36. The Republican Party fought it tooth and nail, and for many years after, until most Americans, particularly the elderly, realized they liked Social Security benefits. And I think we're seeing the same thing with ACA, and of course we've seen this with Medicare, Medicaid. If you listened to yesterday's political theater, or I should say confirmation hearings of Judge Amy Coney Barrett, the Democratic speeches or opening remarks were almost exclusively about the Affordable Care Act, including photographs and stories about people from each senator's state that benefited from the ACA and would be really up the creek, particularly with COVID-19, if they did not have that health care insurance. To counter that, the Republican opening speeches were all about, I think we should focus on the on confirming the candidate here or the nominee rather than talk about the Affordable Care Act. So I think if you're listening, that's the key. If you're listening, you're hearing a great deal about the Affordable Care Act and its future, which really does depend, I think, more on less on what the Supreme Court may do in a few weeks and far more on how the election pans out on November 3rd.
John Iannian, is there a short answer for what sort of patients the Affordable Care Act made the most impact on?
Yes, it's clear that it had the most impact, and generally in a positive way, for those with chronic conditions, diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, or with risks for conditions where we know healthcare matters, such as breast cancer or colon cancer. Those are the groups who clearly benefited from the access to primary care, the improved access to affordable medications that the ACA provides, and where we see benefits. And then there are some other groups that we're beginning to appreciate more, such as those with mental health conditions or with problems with opioid disorders, dependence on opioids. Clearly, the expansion of Medicaid has improved the safety net for people with those conditions, as has the availability of affordable marketplace coverage through the ACA.
It feels like people at the top of the economic ladder have been able to either afford their own health care or secure jobs where they could get reasonable health care. People on the very bottom of the economic spectrum have some access to care through Medicaid. It seems like one of the problem areas that American policy has always had to deal with has been folks in the middle, working people, people who own their own small businesses and have to purchase their own health care. Is that a correct read?
That's certainly a fair summary. Yes, and that's the group that tends to be squeezed the hardest by rising health care costs. And fitting those into their budgets, especially if anyone in their family has a major health condition, which is not always expected or predictable.
So how does that track with who has either the most decision-making power in the political process or who has the most electoral power?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. But, I mean, to me, the real power on this issue is the voters. And they have a real decision to make on November 3rd, because each presidential candidate has a very different view. President Trump, of course, has tried repeatedly to repeal the Affordable Care Act and speaks in very hyperbolic and inaccurate terms of its use, or as he calls it, its failure. And Biden's plan is far more to fix what is wrong with the Affordable Care Act, both legalistically and in terms of its process. But, you know, this represents your definition of the middle being left out, represents the great failure of the Medicaid-Medicare Act of 1965, because at that time, healthcare insurance was relatively cheap, and what the medical enterprise could do for its patients was far more limited and far more affordable than today, with all the bells and whistles and wonderful cures and treatments we have at present.
So if there had been a time, if there had been a time for reform, it would have been at that point.
Exactly. But the thought was that employed Americans would get their health insurance from their employer, and employers, particularly for unionized workers, thought, well, that's a reasonable thing to throw in because it wasn't really all that expensive. And that was the time. Another time was when the Social Security Act was passed. But it was clear from the opposition, from the right, the Republican Party, that that terrible term, socialized medicine, which, you know, if you're on Medicare or Medicaid, you know, you are getting that in a sense. But he felt that there was no way the Social Security Act would pass, so he took that clause out. It's going to take a lot of courage, a lot of gumption, and a lot of support. And my read on the American people, and I'm sure Dr. Ayanian would agree, is that most Americans are content with the Affordable Care Act and want it to continue. If they do, they have a chance to voice their opinion on November 3rd.
Dr. Howard Markell is director of the Center for the History of Medicine at the University of Michigan. And we've also heard today from Dr. John Ayanian, director of the Institute for Healthcare Policy and Innovation at the U of M. And they will be part of a virtual free event tomorrow, October 15th. If you're hungry for more conversation on this, you can hear and interact with a panel of experts from all across the country. Howard, John, thank you both very much. Thank you both very much for being with us.
Thank you, April.
Thank you.